Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
It's that time again. You are back in the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren. And of course, co-host is Mr. David Marty Martino.
Ah, I get a new middle name now.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if we should be calling you Marty or not.
Marty. Well, I used to go by Dave Martin on the on college radio. It was kind of like Marty, I guess.
Yeah, well,
back in the day.
It's that was back when. Yeah,
that was back in the 90s.
Yeah, I was going to say a long time ago. You know, Mr. Martin. It sounds too formal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marty's better.
Marty.
Fly Dave Martin. Pants. Yeah. Well, I mean, people like the Rose. I hear that. Yeah. You know, David Rose. Yes. A serial killer.
Yeah. This is almost like a serial killer.
Hey, so they have you. That's Bob Saget. So you see how he died? You heard that on the news break.
Eh? Yeah. He got hit on the head or something, or he hit himself on the.
Yeah. He hit himself in the head and just went to bed, and I guess. Yep. You know, blood formed on the head and
yeah.
So it makes me wonder.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm waiting for the conspiracy theorists.
Yeah. And you know, plus he had, he had COVID. So, you know, I don't know who's going to kill him, but somebody did. Somebody had to. Hillary Clinton did it.
That's who did it.
That's who they blame all the time. No, Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, that's who did it.
Yeah. It was the chip. The chip made his head explode. That's terrible. Well, so anyway, and Peacemaker. So you're on to that series? You're going to do a review yet?
I haven't watched that yet. I was
You're going to like it.
Am I?
Yeah. Oh. They play all that 80s heavy metal stuff.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Lita Ford, you know all your favorites.
Yeah.
So you're going to
like it. Big Lita Ford fan.
Yeah, well, there you go. So you're going to like it. Yeah. Just for that. Anyway, well, let's get on to the serious stuff. We've got Lita Ford here today. No, we don't. today we are speaking with an author, and she's got a book out called The Wrong Woman, and it's a novel, a Kendall Beck thriller. And that's Leanne Kale Sparks. Thank you for being here.
Hi, it's great to be here. I'm really glad that I'm not Lena and you didn't ask me to sing, though.
Yeah. I wonder whatever happened to Lita. Do you think she's still around?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she just took her music off of Spotify, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, did she?
I think that's what I thought I heard. She's good for her. With Neil Young.
Good for her. Yeah, you know, we went on Spotify just so we took our show off. We weren't on, but we went on, joined it, and then I took it off the next day.
Just in,
well, you know, I've got, I'm Canadian, you see, so I'm, you know, I've got to keep up the good work for old Neil.
Represent.
Oh, I'm terrible, I tell you. All hate mail, remember, goes to Dave.
Yes.
You, it sounds like you've had an interesting life, but it's hard for me to tell. Because it says you had a short career in law and then returned to your first love of writing. So, and I know that in this book, this current book, it's about an FBI agent, if I remember. So tell us, are you CIA, FBI, NSA, like what?
Well, if I were CIA, I couldn't tell you, but so you, that's going to continue to be the mystery. But no, I started out writing just for fun and stuff, and went to college and got, of course, the requisite English degree because I was going to be a prolific writer. And then reality set in. And back at that time, it wasn't really easy to get publishing contracts and things. So I went ahead and went to law school and did some time doing some criminal defense work and some family law. And that was about it. Plus, I was married to a guy in the Navy, which makes me married to the Navy, which means I moved a lot. And we weren't really in one place for very long. And I just got tired of studying for bar exams and trying to get licensed in every different state that we were moving to. So one day I went to him and I said, hey, I think I want to stop this law thing and just start writing. He said, okay. And that's, there we are. Here we are.
There you are. So when you finally stopped running from the law and decided to go to work writing, I always say that's a curious moment. When, you know, is there something that happened in particular? Because, you know, you're doing a job and it's probably, you know, decent work, a decent amount of money, and you're living a life. And, yeah, you're moving a lot. But to actually kind of go, okay, that's it. And then to jump into writing, doesn't that make you nervous?
Oh yeah. I think it made me nervous and probably made my husband even more nervous. But he's very supportive. But I actually was going to take over a family law practice from an attorney. And he was sort of less than reputable. And I didn't last long there and decided that I wasn't going to do that. And one day I was sitting watching the noon news in San Diego, and he pops up on the screen and is being arrested for putting a hit out on his wife. And I'm like, I know that guy. and so that kind of really sparked something. And I sat down and tried to write a story about, you know, kind of what had happened to me. It's never went anywhere. It's still in the maybe you'll get back to it file in my desk. But yeah, it just that kind of set me in motion. And then it was like the floodgates opened and storyline after storyline started popping out, and I couldn't keep up with it. And it just went from there. And when I couldn't get to sleep because I was up until 2 o'clock writing, my husband kind of decided that maybe I was serious about this whole writing thing and gave me the green light.
Yeah, you know, I always find that curious when someone does that. You know, and actually, it's funny when you mention that with the law firm and stuff, not reputable and stuff. There, I don't think people realize it's quite a business, isn't it? The whole legal, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
With all the law firms and stuff like that.
Yeah, it definitely is, and especially in family law, it can be kind of tenuous situations to be in. You're dealing with people and their money and people and their kids. And this particular attorney had spent much time taking people's money and then not showing up to court. So that's never a good thing. And then, you know, the whole trying to kill your wife thing kind of that sets a tone that people don't really trust you. But yeah, law firms, that, you know, you want to make money. Yeah. You have law school debt to pay off. So,
yeah. Well, that's right. It's an expensive venture, right? You spent a lot of time and money getting into law school and passing and getting your bar and then going on into a career. It's hard to just give all that up.
Yeah, it was. But there again, I was returning to something that I really loved. So it was maybe a little bit easier for me than just, you know, out and out quitting because I didn't like it, because I did enjoy it. I just didn't enjoy taking the bar exam. So,
yeah. And at least, and at least you had the writing. Otherwise, you know, it'd be supersized or.
Yeah. I definitely.
You know. You don't want to just, part. Yeah. Okay. So when we get into this book, okay, you say this is a Kendall Beck thriller. So how do you describe what a Kendall Beck thriller is?
Well, Kendall Beck is an FBI special agent. She works in the Crimes Against Children unit. So right there, it's already sort of dicey. I had a few publishers that didn't like the storyline that where Kendall starts, where it starts off with Kendall being involved in searching for a girl that may have been kidnapped or abducted. And it turns out that she may have been molested. So they kind of backed off on that. And I finally did find a publisher that said, we're not squeamish about that. And thriller readers aren't squeamish about that. And so this book really it follows her in this investigation into this child abduction. But then she learns that her best friend is murdered and she shifts gears and starts unofficially working with the Denver Police Department to find out who murdered her best friend. And it's just kind of, you know, the one storyline kind of begets the other storyline and how those two kind of interweave and make a big mystery.
How do you think a story like this comes to you? Is this something that you have kind of maybe run across in your legal career or life? Or do you think it's just something that comes to you in the middle of the night?
Well, I can't actually remember how this story came to me. Usually it's something that's sparked by maybe a news story or an article or, I mean, anything can actually spark it and you go, oh, well, then what if this happened and what if this happened? But Kendall, her character, I wanted to make her a special agent in the Crimes Against Children unit because I have luckily had a contact that was in the FBI and in that unit, and he was able to introduce me to some FBI agents, so I got to see how they worked and what they were doing, and I think it's such important work that they do in this unit that I really wanted my character, the Kendall character, to be in that unit and be somebody that is really fighting for good and doing, you know, just a horrible kind of job.
Yeah. When you focus on that unit, you know, the child protective and all that, I wonder, do you think that the public in general understands really what kind of work they do or what goes on in that unit?
I don't think so. I don't, because before I had heard of it, before I was introduced to it through my FBI friend, I hadn't ever really heard of it and hadn't really considered it. And there's so many areas that they cover. You know, it's not just like child abduction that you hear about on the news where, you know, all of a sudden the kid is just taken and then you never see him again. It's the grooming of children. It's the finding the right kind of child that feels like they're not loved or not accepted. And these men and sometimes women find these people and these kids and they groom them to be prostitutes. And it's just really a horrible existence. They get them hooked on drugs and it's just not a good thing. And so I wish that more people understood what this unit was doing. I know that they put up press releases sometimes, and there's usually annually they have a big roundup of these sex trafficking rings. And I was really surprised that they do this like at the Super Bowl. So expect something at the Super Bowl where they kind of go in and they, and this is a big part of big events like this, where you can, people go in and they can buy children. And it's so I wish there was more that they could say about it, and it could be more, you know, known, so people can take better care of, you know, watching out for these things and seeing what the FBI is actually doing, because it is important work. And I think it's really kind of hard work for them to do, and not many people want to get into it.
Yeah. And I, one of my books I wrote years back was In Chains. It was about trafficking, and there were so many things going on in the U.S. like that, child trafficking, and kind of like you're describing. And I was surprised when we were doing promo for that book, how many people were like, their response was, that doesn't go on here. That couldn't go on in the States, or that isn't, that's not real type thing. And it's like, no, there's a ton of it happening right now.
Yep. That's why I put this, I wanted to put the setting in Colorado, because that's where I'm from originally. And I wanted to do it in Denver, because there's a big, you know, in, there's two big interstates that go right through there, 70 and I-25. And it's lots of trucking. There's lots of traffic. And those are the areas where this sort of thing happens, where, you know, these major highways and stuff. And so I really was in, I'm amazed at how many people don't consider that either. And I have three girls, they're grown now, but still there's a lot of, you know, be aware of what's going on around you. Just be aware of, you know, you don't, you have to take care not to do certain things. And, you know, like most kids, they think, ah, that won't ever happen to me. And it's really hard to kind of get through to people that, yeah, this kind of thing can happen. And once it happens, then it's too late. You know, then it's too late. You can't go back and say, oh, I should have. I should have done this. I should have warned them about that. I shouldn't have let them go here by themselves. So I think it's important to kind of get it out there. And I'm happy that Crooked Lane let me, you know, go down this line, this storyline, because I think it is important for people to consider that it can happen to any child. It can happen to anyone. And it's a big business in this country.
Well, with your research into child trafficking and your writing, is it hard for you to, is it hard for you really? Do you need to decompress from researching and writing about stuff like this?
Yes, that's why I have a very good wine collection.
That's the way to do it.
It does, yeah. It's coffee in the morning, wine, you know, after coffee. But yeah, it can get really tedious sometimes, and it can get just depressing to consider. And so I know when I'm getting too far down that road of where I'm getting too involved and I need to take a break, because it's just too heavy. And so I'll, you know, leave my office and go and usually now my husband works from home, so I can go and talk to him and stuff, but it can get really hard to go down. But sometimes when you get into the research, you just keep going and you keep going and you keep going. And, you know, hopefully you don't get too far down that road to where it just gives you nightmares. So I haven't been there yet. So I'm glad about that.
Well, you know, it'll come. I'll warn you now. I mean, I've done, I don't know how many, 26 true crime books or something. And I think what it is, to be honest, is it's you are dealing with the negative element of human, you see, you're constantly dealing with what people do and you just don't understand. You go, why? This is crazy. That's terrible. And you kind of go over it and over it again. And if you get a lot of that, I think the only way out of it is to drink a lot of wine. You got to find good things that people do. Yeah. You got to look for some positive on the side as well to kind of realize that, you know, it's like if you're, I see this with police and different law enforcement that really get involved in cases, and they start acting like everyone is bad because that's all they're dealing with. So it's hard to pull yourself out of that. So you just have to be drunk.
Yeah. Well, I think where I may have an advantage over you is since you write true crime, I'm still in the fiction. So I can still kind of lie to myself that it's, you know, this isn't real. This is a story I'm making up. This isn't, you know, I'm trying to make it as, you know, salacious and gasp worthy as I possibly can. So I can kind of pull myself back out of it. I can't imagine writing true crime and researching and actually writing about and getting so involved in. I mean, the amount that I get involved in a fictional character, I can't imagine what it's like to do it on a true crime side. So kudos.
Yeah. No. It's got its moments. It depends on the case and it depends on how far you go in. If you're meeting the killer and you're meeting the family of the victims and all that, when you're going through all that, because you have to kind of bounce off of their emotions. So it's unusual. It usually bothers you after.
Yeah.
More than at the time, for me anyway. I mean, everyone's different, I guess. So, you know, is that kind of the subtext or something that you want people to get? So, you know, if I pick up The Wrong Woman and I read it, you know, there's the story and there's all the salacious details and all this thing going on. But after I read it, is there something you're hoping I take away from the book?
Well, the main character goes through a lot of growth, sort of. She learns a lot about her best friend, in that she didn't realize a lot of stuff that was happening to her. And Kendall Beck as a character, she takes on a lot of what is happening around her and to her, and thinks that she is failing. So, I mean, I would love if people would become more aware of the sex trafficking side of it, but that's really kind of a minor subplot in the book. The overarching plot in the book is this relationship she has with her best friend, who's now dead, and she's realizing that there was a lot of stuff she didn't know while she's trying to find who murdered her. And it starts bringing up a lot of things from her past, where she had dealings with a serial killer and kind of tried to help a girl that was the serial killer's victim get away and failed her. And so now she has this constant feeling that she's failed everybody in her life, that in some way she's failed. And that's really kind of what keeps driving her. And it's kind of sad because it's also, it drives her forward, but if she would just take a step back and realize that she didn't, it's not all her fault, then she might, you know, be a little bit happier and not take on the burdens of the world. But then again, that's really what drives her and makes her a good FBI agent. So it's kind of, you know.
Yeah. How much of you is in Kendall Beck? Like, what do you, like, there's always some of a writer in their characters. And how much of Kendall Beck is you?
All of her sarcasm is me. other than that, I'm not real sure. But yeah, she's got a sarcastic quick wit, and I think that pretty much is me. But mostly I think it's somebody that she's very strong, so it's somebody I wish I was, I'm hope I'm like. But yeah, other than that, I think that she's just kind of this compilation of a lot of strong women that I know. And then of course my contribution is the sarcasm. Yeah. And the drinking of the wine.
Yeah, well, that's important too, right? You know, it's, you know, big part of the personality. Well, I just wonder, so now a lot of fiction writers say to us when we're interviewing them that they have a unique relationship with their characters, and sometimes they'll describe them as children or friends or family. I hear all sorts of descriptions. How would you describe your relationship with your characters?
Yeah, you do start actually feeling like they are living, breathing people that you just never actually see. And when you start seeing your characters, then, you know, you need to back off from the wine a little bit. But but no, I think that it's the kind of the relationship between her and everybody else that kind of that's where I feel close to her, in that the friendships that she has and the way that she responds to people. But yeah, she pretty much just lives in my head, but I do feel kind of like it's somebody that I know that she could be a person that I would be friends with and know and stuff. But so far she's just in my head.
Well, you know, I find your prose, you know, very rhythmic, very readable. Do you hear the rhythm of language and as you're writing, and can you hear Kendall and your other characters, do you experience her and your other characters in some other way?
No, I really do hear them. I hear their voices, and yeah, when I'm writing, there's definitely a flow to it, and I can. A lot of times I'll be doing mundane stuff and a scene will hit me and I'll be like, oh, I got to write this down and I want to make sure I get that in. But when most of the time when I'm writing and you just have this really good flow going, it really does feel like there's just like it's choreographed and you just kind of know it. And it's an odd feeling, but you really feel in the moment and you really feel like, oh, I've got this, and it just flows along and feels like it's being choreographed and everything is working together and the voices are there. And I think that's really how I can make the dialogue between them hopefully feel real and like it's an actual conversation that people could have outside of a book, because I hear them in my head and it is so different.
Are you planning, because you say this is a Kendall Beck thriller, is this going to lead to a series with Kendall Beck?
Well, there is a book 2 in the works. And hopefully, if people like the characters, then there will be more to come, but there is definitely a book 2 that will feature Kendall and Adam Taylor again.
When you talk about a serial killer in your book, what kind of research do you do for that? Do you actually try to find a real serial killer and kind of go through the details of them, or is this something that from your own experience of being a serial killer?
Well, I don't really talk about that much because I haven't been convicted. So I kind of keep that on the down low. But no, I do research a lot. I do have books on serial killers. Probably the person I go to most for reference is Dr. Catherine Ramsland. And she wrote a book about BTK. And she's really kind of very much a person that understands serial killers and what they're thinking and why they kind of why they do what they do, knowing that, you know, while we say serial killers have kind of things that they that are in common, each of them has in common, each one of them really is kind of different in how and why they do things that they, you know, killing people. So it's interesting. I've always kind of been interested in serial killers. Not because I do that, but,
he's actually,
you know about anyway.
Oh yeah. Catherine's a good friend. I've known her for a long time, had her on the show 3 or 4 times, you know,
she's amazing.
And, she actually wrote a really good review of one of my books she did an article.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool. And she said she's using it in one of her classes. So there you go.
Well, I met her at a Writers Police Academy, and she was my shooting partner. So, and then of course, all of her panels. So yeah, so we took out some guys at a bank. So it was great fun. I had a good time.
Well, you know, you write directly from the point of view of the serial killer in your prologue. What's it like getting into the mind of the killer?
Yeah, it's really fun. I kind of like it. And I gave this to an author friend of mine way back in the early days when it was still just like a short story. And I hadn't expanded much on it. And there was a lot more of the serial killer voice in it. And she's like, oh, wow, you just really do this well. You're really good at writing serial killer. And I'm like, I think that's a compliment. I'm going to take it as a compliment. So, yeah, but it's almost a no holds bar kind of thing. You can get into it and go, well, of course this guy would think this, and of course he'd do that. And it's kind of a way of pushing the boundaries of maybe acceptability or, but of, you know, where you go, ew, ick, no, people wouldn't do that. When you're writing, you can go, oh yeah, they would. Yeah, they would. This guy did. This guy's going to do it. I think it's mostly the accepting. It's the voice, the serial killer making it seem like it's a normal thing. What they're doing is completely normal. There's nothing wrong with it. And trying to take that and this horrendous situation and heinous act that they're doing and justify it as, well, this is just how I am. And so, of course, it's okay to do. So that's kind of fun to play with, too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, along that line, too, from my experience, you could put that on the way people do, no matter what they do, they do it with that reason because they see the world in a certain way. They see their place in that. In a certain part of society, and then they take that, and that's the reason why they can do what they do.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of weird, you know. And that I don't know if you've seen Catherine's show on A&E about the BTK that she did.
Yeah.
See, that's the way it should be done. That's one of the best true crime shows I've seen, and I watch them all because we interview most of the people that do it. And I'll tell you, that's the way it should be done. They're just, it's not about selling. It was just straightforward, and she did what she had to do. I think it was a really good, really good thing. So,
yeah, he's interesting to begin with. I mean, that I think a lot of, at least from my research and talking to Catherine and other, you know, people that know a thing or two about serial killers, is they're very proud of what they do. Some of them, you know, they're egotistical and they're very narcissistic, and they really just want to tell you how great they were at what they did. You know, it'd be like, you know, you're interviewing me and about my writing, it'd be like, you know, well, interview me about how great I did in my job of killing people and the police not being able to find out who it was for, you know, however many people I killed. So it's an interesting, he is definitely interesting how he would compartmentalize what he was doing and how he did it.
Yeah, you know, it's a really funny thing that she, when she interviewed him and she was talking over the 5 years, and she would ask him how he saw himself and stuff. He saw himself like Britney Spears, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't that, I just say, holy cow, that's so crazy.
Yeah. He's I'm a rock star at what I do. You
yeah.
know? Like, okay, good for you, buddy, but we're
yeah.
going to block you away for right now.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, yeah. And, you know, hey, that's what we deal with. But now, your other main character, your detective, Adam Taylor. Now, where did you get him from? Is that like your husband kind of turned into detective?
No.
You shouldn't. Now I could cut that out, because you certainly don't want to be laughing like that.
No, you know. He's definitely not my husband. I don't know where he comes from, actually. I wanted somebody that would play off of Kendall, but I wanted Kendall not to be, first of all, I didn't want there to be any sexual tension between them. I didn't. And I just wanted there to be like this camaraderie between the two of them. But I wanted him to be kind of like taken aback by her a little bit. So, you know, not expecting her to be as tough as nails maybe as she is. And you know, she kind of says things like it is. And I wanted him to be like, you know, I wanted her to have the upper hand a little bit in the relationship, and him kind of sitting there going, what in the world am I gotten myself into? So I'm not really sure who he is. He's probably somebody I've met in my past that I've forgotten about, and he snuck back in there.
Oh, so you see, we're getting to secrets now.
Yep.
Well, this book is kind of about secrets, so yeah. You'll cut this part out, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's it. That's going to be the promo.
Chris was going to come home from his business trip and go, so I heard you've been thinking about other men, and that's...
You're fictional. They're fictional.
Yeah, they're fictional.
They're fictional.
I don't know that that helps.
No, probably not. You know, I was just dreaming it, yeah. Uh-huh. It was all a dream. No, Well, that's interesting. So do you find characters or supporting characters in that from places and people you've seen? Do you go out to coffee shops and you kind of peruse, or hanging out at the mall? And where do you get all these other characters?
You definitely have to be somebody that wants to be an observer of people, I think, to write fiction. I love going to coffee shops and going to when you could go to the mall, go to a mall, the airport, places where people kind of sometimes will let their inhibitions down a little bit, you know, because you can sit like in an airport, you can actually sit there and watch people walking by and having conversations that, you know, they don't take into account where they are and that other people can be listening to them, and they may not care because you're never going to see them again. But yeah, I think it's a lot of the characters that I come up with are just maybe people I've seen or things that I've seen people do. And it's like, it's not just like, oh, I know this person and I'm going to make them this character. It's more what you observe people doing. And then, of course, in your writer's brain, you can make that go, well, what if this happened? And what if they're like this? Or, you know, what if they have this secret life that nobody knows about? And, you know, you can kind of go down various little avenues on that and make a pretty interesting character that isn't anybody that's real to life, but just kind of a compilation of things that you've seen.
Well, I'm wondering, in the course of your writing, has Kendall or any of your other characters done anything to surprise you? Gone off the rails or anything like that?
In this book, the biggest surprise to me was that I was probably about two edits away from actually having a polished manuscript to send out. The serial killer changed. who they are changed. And I was like, oh, well, that's a surprise. So that, I guess that is a character that surprised me. Mostly, I think that where Kendall will surprise me sometimes is she has unguarded moments. And I think that that's actually something that a lot of people don't ever really see in people that they know. Like if you meet somebody and you're like, oh, they're so strong, you just don't ever get to see that the side of them that isn't strong and they do let go. And so I think that there are a couple times in the book that she kind of lets her guard down and you can see some emotional side of her.
So when you finished this book, sent it in, got it edited, and now it's published, do you think the experience has changed you some, and will your next book be different because of it?
Well, it's been an experience, yeah. I didn't really understand as much as I'd like to about traditional publishing and how things kind of, the amount of time it takes and stuff. As far as the writing goes, I think that just by writing it and being involved in, you know, you write and then you edit and you read it and you read it and you read it. And so you get to know the characters really well. So I think that there's a lot of, in book two, it really focuses more on Adam and what he's going through because he's the one that is in trouble. Well, his niece is kidnapped. And so Kendall comes in and helps him with that investigation. And so it's more of an emotional roller coaster on his side in book two. So we'll get to know more about him and his family and some things going on. And then how that relationship between Kendall and Adam kind of grows and their friendship grows and things that actually happen in real life with friends where sometimes they just don't agree on how things work. And I think there's some of that tension that's going to be in this.
Interesting. Any influences that help you when you're writing?
Oh, wow. I am a huge reader. So I love anything by Harlan Coben and Karen Slaughter and Lisa Gardner and Tammy Hoag and the list goes on and on. But I really think that I love Harlan Coben and Karen Slaughter because I think that they kind of gave me permission to actually make characters that talk like real people and that they have these issues and stuff. So they're not perfect people that come in. And I think I think those are the two that have really.
Oh, don't forget me. You always mention me.
Well, and you. I was just speaking on the fiction side of thing. On true crime, it totally you.
I'm going to get a complex. You. Nobody mentions me, you know?
You know, I tried to pitch you in the back of my book, and they said, no, Alan will get a big head.
Oh, so that's true. Yeah, that's it.
That's Al.
Yeah, that's me. Wow. So I wonder then, too, so any of your fans or people that read, what do you think influences you that would really surprise them? Like, you know, are you listening to ballet or heavy metal? Or is there something you do that sort of would be out of character for the books you write?
I can only write to classical music. So that would probably be a big surprise. So, you know, I'm writing about people being murdered in various ways that are kind of disgusting. And I'm doing it to classical music. So I can never write with music that has words, because then you just start singing along and you can't have that. So yeah, I think that would probably be it. I also have whiteboards everywhere. And it's this really cool stuff that you can, it's like peel and stick whiteboard, and it goes on all of the walls I can get it on. And that's how, because I'm an uber plotter, so I plot everything and I replot it, and I get down into the minutiae before I can actually sit down and write it out. And I think that works for me, because then that gets me into that flow where I can just write, because I know the story, I know where it's going. And so I usually have like three walls of nothing but whiteboard. So, and notes all over it that nobody will ever be able to understand.
Well, I was wondering if the reason you can't listen to lyrics is because they kind of drown out the voices in your head. That's what it happens to me.
Probably. Kendall would be yelling at me, "Hey, can we turn the music down a little bit, and can you listen to me? I got something to say."
Well, you know, so, too, you acknowledge Crooked Lane as helping you to, you know, I think you said too, you know, make the book better than you ever dreamed it could be. And, you know, I think people don't know that, you know, major publishers used to do that, and they used to really work with a writer, and, you know, that they felt had a lot of promise, and they'd really work with them to build their career. And it looks like that's what Crooked Lane is doing. So that's very heartening to see.
Yeah. My developmental editor, Terry over there, she was great, because the book actually came to her, and it had the serial killer's voice throughout. And she said, it's good, but it's not, we can't have it in the book that much. Because then you can kind of, it's really hard to have that voice in there and not give too much away. And I wanted there to be a pretty big twist at the end of who this is, actually is. So we had that discussion. We had the discussion of, you know, how the relationship between Kendall and Adam would go, and she was very receptive to me saying, I don't want there to be a romance there. I just want it to be a friendship. I just want them to have a good working relationship, and not bring in the business of romance. I mean, that could change down the road. We could, you know, 6-7 books down the road, she may come back to me, or I may go back to her and say, "Hey, let's do this." But the whole team over at Crooked Lane has just been, especially since this is a debut novel for me and the first time I've traditionally published, so I don't know anything about what I'm doing. And, you know, they're always very receptive when I email them with a stupid question. Or they're like, "Hey, Leanne, you need to be doing this. And hey, can you do that?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, sure. No problem." So they're very helpful over there. And yeah, I can ask for better.
In 10 years, when you're real famous, you'll be telling them.
I don't like this. So I'm going to be asking for only the green M&Ms in the hotel room. I have a band on my arm that says, you know, "What would Alan do?"
Well, of course. I mean, yeah. I mean, who doesn't? So your structure. So you outlined everything, it sounds like, which is great. I mean, and it works for you. But are you the type of person that can just turn it on? So you've got nobody in the house, or you've got some quiet time. Can you just go, "Well, 11 to 3 today, I'm all alone, I'm going to write"? And can you just sit down and write? Or do you have to be in a mood?
Sadly, I have to be in a mood. Usually I can get in that mood. The way our house is set up, even with my husband working from home, because, you know, everything changed after quarantines and with the pandemic. And so he works from home, but he's got his own office, and I've got like the whole upstairs basically for my office. So I don't hear him. And I'm not bothered by him, and I can turn my music on and I can look over my notes, and whether I'm still in the outlining process or in the writing process, I can usually get into it pretty well. The only parts that I really struggle with writing is when I get to, I have to write in chronological order. I can't skip around. Mm. A lot of times people can be like, people have told me, well, if you're stuck, move on to the next scene and then come back to that. I've never been able to do that. So that's the biggest struggle for me, is that if I can't figure out what comes next, sometimes I'll just be like, I can't figure this out. And so then it's a couple of days of not writing or not doing anything because my brain is just stuck on this one stupid little thing. And usually I'll go in and instead of trying to write the story, I'll write dialogue, and I won't put any tags on it or anything. It'll just be straight dialogue, the people talking in my head, and that sometimes will get that block out of the way, and then things start rolling again. Of course, then when I come back to it, when I'm editing, I have no idea who's saying what, so that's yeah. always a fun
well,
exercise.
Well, you know, that sounds like the line talking.
Well, you know,
yeah, if you can't figure out the problem you're stuck on by the time too much wine is given, it's over. Do you actually act out the serial killer in your head then, if you're using that voice? Do you go out there and start killing people? No, do you go out and I was just wondering. I thought I'd trick you. You know, maybe you'd talk about how you'd dress up like a, you know, like some BTK, and then you go out and start, you know, seeing how it would work. I don't know.
I haven't ever gotten that far, but I do. I'm very visual in that. There are scenes where I will watch like shows or something like. You can always hop onto like ID Discovery or something and find a serial killer show, or even just a show about people murdering people. So I can get into it that way by watching it, but yeah. So a lot of times it's just going and looking for what I need to kind of inspire me. The serial killer thing, usually I kind of know where I want it to go, and I just kind of let it take over, and sometimes has a mind of its own, and you just kind of follow it down, and then, you know, you can cut out the parts that you need and correct it. But I typically, because I plot it out so well, by the time I get to the writing part of it, I kind of know where.
Are you a big social media fan, and do you interact with readers that way, or do you like the reviews and that sort of thing, or?
I do. I like social media. I like, I don't, the part of social media I don't like is the part where you have to be on it. But I do love getting messages from readers. This week has been kind of surreal for me because I've gotten a lot of emails and messages and stuff from readers. And that's always really good. The reading of reviews, I don't do it often, but I will do it because I think there's value in all reviews for a writer, and even in the bad reviews. I think if more than one person, or, you know, three or four people say, I didn't like this part of the book, then there's something to be learned there. You know, you can't obviously go back and change your book or anything, and nor would you want to, but knowing what worked or where you had a misstep maybe, can help in future books and in future writing, because I really do believe that you never stop learning. You never stop learning the craft of writing, or you really shouldn't. I mean, you should always want to be learning and trying to make it better and seeing it. You know, sometimes you push the envelope, especially in these murder mysteries and thrillers. You try and push the envelope because you don't want to just do the same thing. And thriller readers, they're just voracious. They can read these books in like a day or two, and they constantly just want more and more. And so you're, as a writer, you're trying to push the envelope as much as you can just to get that, you know, gasp-worthy response of, I can't believe they did that. But sometimes you can go too far too, and you want to know where that line is. So I think reading reviews can kind of, not only can it bolster you, but it can be, it can give you some good information and good input.
You're far too nice. You know, you find that bad review, you find out who they are, and you take them in the next book, you kill them. You make them an awful person, and you make them suffer.
I don't need reviewers for that. I've got enough people in my own life that I can.
Oh, there you go.
See, victims.
So, okay, how do you like people to interact with you? Do you like certain social media sites, or do you have a website, or how do you like people to get a hold of you?
Well, I do have a website, and there's a contact page on there, so that'll send me email. And also it has links to all the social media that I am on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and all of those. So you can, it's kind of a one-stop shop. You can go there, you can find out about me, you can find out about my books and where to get them, and you can find out how to interact with me on social media.
Well, we have that link on our website as well, so people can find you with one click, you know, and let you know what they think of your book and things like that. You know, how did COVID go for you? Like, it, you know, writing during COVID and stuff, does that outside stress get in the way? Like you say, you kind of have to be in a mood.
Well, it didn't, COVID didn't actually bother me, because I mean, I'm so used to working from home anyway. So, and I didn't, I'm, don't really leave the house that much as it is, except to, you know, run out to the coffee shop or something, or go to the grocery store. But so it didn't affect me that way. It was more having people in the house all the time. My, like I said, my husband, he was home all the time, and I, my eldest daughter finished up her master's degree in Scotland and came back, and then COVID hit, and she was stuck in our house. And so she was there for about a year. And it was, that was difficult, because whenever you have a child come home, who's lived on their own, there's a little tension there. So I think it helped, but it helped me in that, because she was there, she also is a writer, she writes nonfiction, but we could bounce things off of each other. And so that was nice to have another writer in the house. But you know, it wasn't horrible for me. My husband has now, I can no longer do DoorDash or Instacart. I have to actually leave the house because I got too into that. And then I was like, okay, so we have to stay home all the time, and I can just order from Amazon and Instacart. They just bring all this stuff to me. This is awesome. So that part of COVID was okay. And, but now he's like, no, you have to actually leave the house and interact with people. So yeah. that's been good.
Dave's still there. He's not interacting. He's no, still ordering no. food and not getting up. He's really getting into this, you know. Just telling you. Yeah. Well, now the book you have to buy. Now, everyone listening, you got to buy The Wrong Woman. It's a novel. It's a Kendall Beck thriller. You know, Leanne needs the money. She's got lots of wine to buy. She hears a lot of voices, and she's hanging out in the coffee shop trying to figure out who she's going to write about. So she needs your help. So don't forget that. So that'll be up on our site as well. So help. This is a GoFundMe. Well, so yeah, so the book we're talking about, The Wrong Woman, and the guest is the author, Leanne Kale Sparks. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Thanks, Leanne.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.